CD 4. To Quinta's relief, the dramatic treatment seemed to bear fruit. That cast eased the pain and helped a little, she remembered. She tried not to think of what was happening beneath the cast, of what she'd started to suspect, that one leg was beginning to shrivel up and become shorter than the other. The cast stayed on for 9 long months. As summer turned into fall and she felt some improvement, she gave thanks that Dr. Humphreys's treatment appeared to have helped her. It was a time for thanks. On Thanksgiving itself, 27th of November, Hazel Couser was finally released from her New York hospital and allowed to return to Newark to be with Theo and her mother Grace. As the family gathered together, they tried to feel the blessing of the fact that at least she was home. But she wasn't the same person anymore. She had suffered so frightfully that her mind seemed affected. A priest, Carl Quimby, who was attending the family to offer spiritual comfort, said, "She suffered excruciating agony." It was perhaps then, when they tried to think of Hazel and put her first, the biggest blessing of all when, on Tuesday, 9th of December, 1924, she finally passed away. She died at 3 a.m., at home, with her husband and mother by her side. She was 25. By the time she died, her body was in such a distressing condition that the family would not allow her friends to see it at the funeral. It was Theo who notified the authorities of her passing, Theo who organised the embalming of her battered body and her burial on 11th of December in Rosedale Cemetery. These were the final things he could do for her, for the woman he had loved since he was a boy. He didn't want to think about the future, about the fact that the mortgage on their home had been foreclosed, about the fact that his father had impoverished himself in helping him and Hazel with their bills. By the time she died, Theo Sr. had spent all his life savings. The family's bills, for hospitals, x-rays, ambulances, physicians, house calls, medicine and transport to New York, ran to almost $9,000. They had ruined themselves, and it was all for nothing. Catherine Wiley, of the Consumers League, who had stayed in touch with the family as she continued to support the dial painter's cause, found the situation unbearable. Frustrated that nothing had been done by the authorities, she now pursued 2 leads. First, she wrote to Dr. Alice Hamilton, a brilliant scientist who was considered the founder of industrial toxicology and who always championed the victims of occupational disease. Hamilton was the first ever female faculty member of Harvard University, and her department chair happened to be one Cecil Drinker. Hamilton knew nothing of Drinker's report on the orange plant, for although Rhoda was using it to quash the fears of his employees and to justify the company's refusal to help the afflicted women, Drinker had not yet submitted it for any official publication. Thus, on receipt of Wiley's letter, not aware of any conflict of interest, Hamilton enthusiastically expressed the desire that the Consumers League should take up the cases vigorously, with whatever cooperation I can give you. She wrote, "From what I can hear of the attitude of the company, it is pretty callous." She proposed that perhaps she could undertake her own study as a special investigator –